Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
It is estimated that up to one-third of us still regularly miss breakfast. Many put this down to time pressures in the morning, but with a little planning, I promise you can find a choice to suit your lifestyle. Research has shown that people who eat breakfast have more balanced diets than those who skip it, and are less likely to be overweight and have reduced risk of certain diseases such as cardiovascular disease and diabetes. Eating breakfast may also help to improve mental performance, concentration, and mood. That's three more good reasons to eat eggs in the morning. On your next supermarket list, add Clarence Court free-range eggs. I'm telling you, the rich flavour and colour of their yolks really can make the most ordinary recipes extraordinary. You can find Clarence Court eggs in all the major supermarkets, including Waitrose, Sainsbury's, Tesco, Ocado. And to learn more, please visit clarencecourt.co.uk. Hello, and thank you so much for tuning in to Food for Thought, a podcast on a mission to equip you with all the evidence-based advice you need to live and breathe a healthy lifestyle. I'm Rhiannon Lambert, registered nutritionist, best-selling author of Renourish, A Simple Way to Eat Well, and founder of Retrition, London's leading private nutrition clinic. In each episode, I'll be joined by special guests, all of whom can be considered authoritative voices in health, so that together we can learn fact from fiction and empower the healthiest and happiest versions of ourselves with trusted expert advice. Social media has changed the way we consume news, products, and, most importantly, each other. However, it's also shaping our expectations of reality, undermining our esteem, and fueling obsessive social comparison. So, what can we do to make us mindful of the negative impacts of social media and to begin benefiting from the very best of our social world and what it has to offer? One fashion journalist turned influencer has charted her journey into the world of social media fantasy, and she now wants to burst the bubble. Catherine Ormerod is the author and bestseller of Why Social Media is Ruining Your Life, in which she speaks of health professionals and global influencers to really understand the terrifying consequences and what we might be able to do about avoiding them. Catherine brings a wealth of reporting experience with roles at Sunday Times Style, Grazia and Glamour. So hello, Catherine.
Hello.
I think on social media, yep, sometimes all you see is a procession of idyllic holidays and perfect bodies with none of the context of what's actually going on behind the scenes. So social media is not really a reflection of anyone's lived life, is it?
I don't think it could possibly be a reflection of anyone's lived life, to be honest, because unless you were posting first thing in the morning, when you go to the loo, when you get up and go to the kitchen, and have, you know, you would have to have a kind of like panopticon level of videos installed in your house. And even then, there would be a lens that you knew was available that was, you know, being shone on you, which would change your behavior and change the way that you presented yourself. So I don't think that you can ever believe that social media is representative of anything other than what people want you to see.
That's so true. It reminded me, actually, when you said that, of a Black Mirror episode that I saw Where I think they had a camera in their eye, but it was there 24/7.
Yeah.
It's quite daunting. And in your book, you uncover how our relationship with social media has, you know, rewired behaviour patterns. It may have destroyed confidence and shattered attention spans. Does anyone have a chance of enjoying a healthy relationship with it?
Look, this is brand new technology, you know, and human beings have in the past struggled at the sharp end of change, and that's really where we are at the moment. It's going to take a generation or two for us to assimilate this new technology into our lives in a more healthy way. But, you know, if you think of all of the moral panics and huge social anxieties there were around television or computer games, or believe it or not, the novel in the 17th century, you know, at different times, media has caused a huge amount of uproar because the way that it does change our relationships to each other and our expectations of what life should look like. And, you know, social media is obviously being the most invasive and full-on version of that that we've experienced so far. But, you know, I like to believe that if you go into it with a really healthy mindset, which you have to kind of develop offline, you can really take the best and leave the worst behind.
I think that's very good advice. My next question was actually going to be, I mean, how can you allow it to help you rather than hinder your career or your relationships?
Yeah, I mean, I think the reason that I think a lot of people that have really come to it and are starting to talk about like the more healthy way of using it, quite often you'll find they're people who have lived their life offline and online. So they're probably people like me, the older end of millennial kind of generation, who had school and university without social media. And then this unleashed onto their life and, you know, the past 5 or 6 years to such a huge extent. And you take a little step back and you can remember what it used to be like.
Yeah.
And I think that allows you to evaluate the good and the bad. And when you really start to think about, actually, this is what it's brought to my life. This is, you know, such amazing applications of it. These are the people I've met. These are the worlds that have been opened up to me. It isn't all bad. I mean, then you step away and also think, yeah, it also has made me feel poor and like I needed to buy things and that I didn't spend any time doing things that I was actually interested in. I've been involved in this massive time suck of 5 years of my life. I suddenly don't think that I'm very attractive or very slim, and I worry about the state of my relationship because of this content that I'm shoving down my throat all day long. And, you know, one of the things that I always talk about in the book is, you know, we've had this huge revolution in nutrition, which obviously you know all about.
Yes.
But, you know, we really believe you are what you eat. It's exactly the same. There's a reason it's called a feed. It's, you know, you get to choose what you view, what you put into yourself. And really, ultimately, that forms your experience.
Mm.
You know, it really molds it. So you have to remember that you're the one in control. You can choose what you're putting in, and then it has a massive impact on what you get out of it.
I think that's such a valuable advice. I often talk about, obviously, nutrition's it is actually incorporated now. I mean, a large part of my business is on social media.
Yep.
So I can see the positives, but the difference is it's not me as a person, it's my business.
Yeah.
And I think, like you said, consumers have a responsibility to monitor what they consume. Content creators should also be responsible. There's loads of different factors here.
There are, for
sure. To consider.
There are, but, you know, we hear a lot, just mute or unfollow the people that don't make you feel good. And that's good, of course, like baseline advice. But what you hear very little of is invest time in finding people that inspire you, that change your view of the world, that give you a more representative view of what the world actually looks like, that open your mind or, you know, inspire you to go to a different art gallery or read a different book. I mean, how much time have you spent in the past month researching these people that could enrich your experience on social media? Most people haven't spent a minute.
No.
You know, and they've maybe gone to the explore page where they'd have been fed more people like they've already been following. And if you've been drawn at the beginning to following, you know, 6-foot Australian models, well, you just carry on following more of those. And then suddenly you're like, you look in the mirror and you're not so happy with what you see.
No, you know, I know. And in a way, I think it's so sad because we can sometimes interact more through our phones than we do in real life, like you just said. And do you think it's the addictive nature that comes from the validation we get from others that perhaps we wouldn't hear in real life, like retweets or likes?
Oh, for sure. I mean, look, we are hardwired for validation, and especially social validation. We are social beings first and foremost, and that's the reason that social media has been so incredibly potent, because it does give you that validation and make you feel part of a community. And that's what we all crave, you know. It's fundamental to the way our brain operates. I guess the issue is, like, there was always, it's called Dunbar's number, this kind of, you know, anthropological research to say that in your community there'd be about 150 people. Now, if you're following maybe 10, 20 times that amount of people, and you're forming all these loose ties to them and potentially spending so much time with them that you're not interacting with people IRL, it's a very strange moment for this anthropological, you know, standard that we've had for decades, because, you know, you're connected and hearing a lot of noise about other people's lives that we never, ever would have before. And I think then when you add into that, before, of those 150 people, you'd look at them and someone would be doing worse than you and someone would be doing better. And you've kind of got an idea of what normal was. Now everyone's doing better than you, because all we show are our very best moments. Very, very rarely will I look through Instagram and be like, oh man, she is having a terrible time, or like, she looks really rough, yeah. You know. Of course, these days we're much more likely to open up about the more gnarly sides of life as well. But in general, you do see this gloss. And of course, that completely reframes your understanding of what normal means. You think that normal is so far further up the scale. You know, if you don't have a four-bedroom house, and if you're not driving a 4x4, and if you don't have two children and an amazing boyfriend by the time you're 29 or 30, then you're not really, you know, performing in comparison to your peers. And I think that's where the rot sets in.
Gosh, I could literally, I mean, I loved reading your book and I could listen to that all day. And I think there's so much to do with comparison theory and the way we validate ourselves based on the others around us. It actually got me thinking, this is a bit off topic from this particular podcast, but about the dating world. I mean, it's now so different because of the fact we're all online. Like you said, it's not your fishing pool anymore in your local town.
Oh, no. I mean, I remember growing up, like, everyone had kissed everyone. Yeah. You know, there was just such a limited number of options, yeah, that you all kind of went round in circles. And now, don't get me wrong, I think it is amazing that my mum met her husband online.
Yeah,
they've been married for 18 years, you know. It's like, it's incredible. Lovely. And there's no way they would have ever met, ever in a million years. And I think we've all got friends that have fantastic stories. And after my divorce, I did a lot of online dating, and it really helped me get back on track. And I met my current partner in real life now, but you know, it had given me experience which I would haven't had, like, he would have 100% been the first date post my ex-husband, because there's no way. I worked in fashion, it was only women, you know, that I worked with, and there was just no opportunity to meet anyone. And that kind of dating moment really, you know, it unleashed me. It gave me an opportunity.
Oh, I like it. Unleashed you. Yeah. We had Catherine out in the world at that point in time.
Exactly. But, you know, and I think the problem, the research really shows, is the problem happens is when online dating becomes, like, prolonged and part of life. Mm. And, you know, you started doing it at the beginning and it maybe made you feel better about yourself and you got that validation, and then, you know, you're going on 3 dates a week and it carries on for 3, 6, 9, 12 months, and you start to really lose faith in the whole thing. And that's obviously understandable. It's exhausting.
I think it really can be. I have a lot of, obviously in my clinic, I hear a lot more than just the nutrition side of my clients' lives. So I hear the positives and the cons to media and dating platforms all the time. But it's ironic that a platform that was designed to be a connection for people and bring us together has also become toxic and addictive. I mean, how much screen time is too much?
Yeah, it's really difficult, isn't it? I mean, I have quite high screen time, but I use my phone a lot for work. And I think a lot of us do these days, you know. You wake up in the morning, you answer the urgent emails. I, you know, worked in a lot of research, and as a journalist, you spend ages and ages going through articles here and there, and you could very easily spend 2 hours from the New York Times to, you know,
easily.
Daily Telegraph or whatever. And that's, then you add in, you know, you went on Deliveroo or you went on Uber and, you know, bought something from Amazon and then spent 45 minutes on Instagram through the day. Suddenly it starts adding up.
And especially you're like, the scrolling of feeds and things. I think that's when it becomes not as helpful.
Yeah, I mean, we all have to have our eyes completely open to the fact that millions and probably billions and billions of dollars have been pumped into making these platforms as addictive as possible. Because the more eyeballs they get, the more money they get. And however much we're like, wow, look at this fantastic free service. Like, in this life, nothing comes for free, you know. Yeah. And they are getting not only your data, which we all know the layers of worry around that, but also your time. And your time is the most priceless thing that you have in life. So, you know, you have to really, really... keep it in mind that, you know, if there's this new, exciting filter, the only reason that exciting filter has been developed is to steal more of your time.
And it's something you said in the book as well when I was reading it. And I think I could relate to this. I've definitely done this. I'm not ashamed to admit it. But when you're on the toilet and you're sat scrolling your phone, I think there's a stat in your book that so many people do that.
Yeah, of course. And you do worry about hygiene.
Yeah, exactly. You're like, oh my goodness, quickly put the phone down, like get a wipe on that.
But yeah, you know, if you're in an office 9 to 5 and maybe you've got someone over your shoulder, it's like that moment, isn't it, where you can check in. But, you know, I think... In so many instances where it really shouldn't be used, it is being used. I do exercise classes with like 45 minutes long, and the amount of people that can't get through that 45 minutes with checking in on their apps, you know, it's...
It's an interesting one. I think, obviously, you came from the fashion world originally, and if we're going to talk about comparison a little bit more, I think comparing bodies to one another is something I think we do far too much, and something perhaps you saw... You must have seen it in the fashion world before, even social media platforms. But do you think we're finally starting to see a change there?
Look, I actually really think that social media has been amazing for the democratization of different body shapes and role models, and bringing people from all colours, all creeds, all backgrounds, all, you know, sexes, or, you know, whichever gender you want to define yourself as, all of those things. It's amazing. And if we're honest, there are incredible things about magazines which we've lost by going onto social media, but diversity is not one of them.
It's amazing. One of my friends, Chessie King, is doing quite a lot in terms of the body confidence world. And like you said, diversity of ethnicity and different cultures, the exposure to it is just wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to be honest. You know, we used to run features and there would only be slim white women in it. Yeah. And, you know, it wouldn't, there wouldn't even be anyone. Occasionally you get a reader writing in, but people just presumed that that's what affluence looked like. That's what aspiration looked like. It looked slim, white, female around 30 to 40 with, you know, tons of money.
Wow.
That was generally what we featured in all magazines. And it, you know, I was as complicit as anyone else, but our eyes weren't open in the same way. And we, you know, we just didn't think that there were... It was really difficult to try and find people from all walks of life to feature, just because the networks weren't there. It was really difficult to reach out to people that weren't in your immediate environment. And when you look at how white and monolithic media was back then and how difficult it was to get into it, you know, from a elitist and quite closed nepotistic world, it's really difficult.
It was awful. Even being a so my background is the music industry, and even myself having what they call now as white blonde privilege, you know, I'm accepting that is the thing, and I've been extremely lucky. But even back then, it seemed impossible to get into those magazines, and the money, and like you said, the elitist kind of dream just seemed worlds away from the background I was from.
100%, you know, and so you kind of had to fake it till you make it. And I have to say that my, you know, my magazine career really set me up perfectly to be on social media.
Yes, it did. It really
did. Because smoke and mirrors was what it was all about, you know. we were all earning 14 grand, but prancing around in £300 shoes.
Oh, it's just, you know, showbiz, what we used to call it. Showbiz, darling. But what can help people if they're really struggling not to compare themselves to others online? So what do you recommend to do?
Well, I think that you're not going to find the answer online. Mm. That's the first thing. I think it's really work that you have to do within yourself. And it's really being, you know, having your eyes open to the reality of the way people around you live, you know, and not just believing what you see. It's connecting with your friends and talking about things on a deeper level and really understanding that struggle is universal, you know, no matter what it looks like. And, you know, some people completely up to them, you know, of course, they're not going to share their inner turmoils. But, you know, there isn't anyone in the world, you know, privilege doesn't insulate you from tragedy. It's, you know, we all have parents. At some point, they're going to die, you know. Infertility is a universal, you know, issue in most groups of friends. There's, you know, body issues or career issues or bullying in the workplace or, you know, issues in your marriage, and it's all such hard work.
It's all relative.
It is. And it's like you can't, no one has this jacket that they can put on and go through that and miss it all. And I think when you really realise that and really take that on, you start to view social media more for what it is, i.e. a showcase of the best parts. And I think you need to really analyse what you're doing on social media and what you're showcasing, and then really remember that's exactly what everyone else is doing. Mm. So the number one thing, I think, it's human connection. It's the best antidote to having that. And, you know, have a conversation with a friend and say, it's really getting me down. And you will be shocked at the response, because it will probably be me too.
Yeah.
And then, you know, over a glass of rosé, you can discuss it and you feel supported. And, you know, it's like this: the big problem with social media is we consume it on our own, often at the, you know, the small hours, the morning even, but you know, late at night, first thing in the morning, when our brains are on the edge of subconscious anyway, and we believe the messages we see. If you look at something at 2 p.m. in the afternoon, it just doesn't resonate in the same way as it does when you're in your bed on your own in the dark at 11:30.
Oh, internalizing everything.
Yeah,
is just
exactly. So worrying. I think it's The answer is from a philosophical and attitude point of view, but it's also being disciplined with yourself.
No, it's very good advice.
And we know that, you know, when you're in a bad place, you make bad decisions for yourself. So it's really trying to turn that around and being honest with yourself. If something like, you know, viewing too much social media is making you feel bad, then stop doing it as much.
Yeah, ironically, the word social media, but actually we want you to be social away from the media.
Yeah, exactly.
With your own friends and families. And you mentioned, obviously, from coming from a fashion world, paid advertisements now, the way it's viewed perhaps has changed. You know, it may used to have been seen as selling out, but now a sign of success. People have adopted different ways of working. And I personally have worked with brands on social media myself, nutrition related. However, many fashion influencers, you know, they tag the brands they're using in photos. It's not always clear, even though they're meant to put it, if it was purchased or gifted.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, if you're doing this in a reputable way, you hold yourself to pretty high standards, and I'm always super clear about what's what.
Mm.
Sometimes almost I feel like you go too far, you know? And it's like,
yes,
I bought this 9 years ago at a boot sale at a reduction of 70%.
I have to put disclaimers now underneath. If I make a chocolate brownie recipe, this is how distraught it's now got. I have to write disclaimers under my recipes saying this isn't intended for weight loss, because people assume I'm a nutritionist, that every recipe I put on is so sad.
Well, you know, I understand that, you know, people feel fooled, and I do understand that, of course. Mm. Difficult for me coming from a magazine background is all I'm going to say, is because, you know, advertisers were featured on, and still are featured on, magazine pages because those brands pay for advertising pages. That's, you know, that's how the business model goes.
Yeah.
So it is funny that new media is being held under such extreme amount more scrutiny than traditional publishing. You'd think that the ASA would want to make it very clear across both the boards. And, you know, I often go on trips where there'd be editors from magazines and they'll be being paid for to be there and their flights and all of that stuff and the clothes they're wearing, and there's never any explanation in a magazine. Whereas, you know, every single story that I put up, I'm like, I'm on a gifted press day.
Yes.
You know, it's
yes.
like a whole thing. So, but at the end of the day, transparency can only be a good thing.
Definitely. I think lifestyle blogging seems to be all about monetizing good taste and consumer choices, but that does make it sometimes near impossible for lay people to tell if an influencer genuinely loves a product, if they're being paid to talk about it. Like we said, being open and honest, but surely everyone loves free stuff. And my problem with this is that it's encouraging future generations to see a life where perhaps everything is handed on a plate.
Yeah, I mean, nothing comes for free, that's the reality. And building up a strong enough audience to attract brands to send you free things isn't an easy feat.
No.
You know, a lot of work goes into it. I personally invest a huge amount into photography, for example. I pay photographers, you know, for tons and tons of pictures, which I'm not being paid for, but I invest in the, you know, quality content. So I create this platform, and then sometimes some brands will come along and they will help me pay for it.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
So it's a really tricky thing. Obviously, if you want to run a business and take care of a family and this is part of what you're doing and how you're doing it, if someone offers you money and it's something that you like, yeah, or you don't horrifically hate, you know, then you're going to try and make it work. And when I worked on magazines, we would have to make things work all the time, you know, and that was the skill.
Yeah.
That you would be told, this brand has advertised this month, go into their stores or on their lookbooks and find the very best thing.
Yes.
And that's what you bring to your audience. And that is really the skill that I honed, you know, and over a decade in working magazines. So I truly believe that in most senses and across all budgets, and I think that's really important as well, I try and make what I do accessible to every price point, because, you know, I've lived in London on no money and...
Oh gosh, the porridge dinner days in my...
Exactly. And I do think that there's a lot of snobbery around that kind of thing, but pretty much I think that you can generally, obviously there are some exceptions and there are brands that I wouldn't work with normally for ethical reasons, to be honest.
Yeah.
But in general, I feel like if you go in there with an editor's eye, you can find something fantastic. And that's what fashion and taste should really be about. Not just, oh, I can go to Loewe and wear a full look and, you know, wear a Chloe bag and X, Y, and Z and your whole outfit costs £10,000. Like, to me, that's money and not necessarily style or taste.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like I can go into a store and buy something that was £20 and wear it with something that was £300 and something else that was £42 and, you know, bring something together and look expensive. And that's really what I try and bring to
table. How you speak about fashion with such passion, as it rhymes, to come out.
I know. Because it's amazing. Just, after all these years, I still care.
You do still care, which is really nice to hear, actually. It's made me see things in a different light as well. It's so lovely to hear, because obviously I have such a passion for my area, nutrition. And it's just, it's lovely when you get different viewpoints coming in, which is incredible. And
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
On the topic of the reward that we get back, I know that in your book you discuss the impact it can have on our behaviour. Can you expand on that a little bit?
Well, you know, on like the blunt end, obviously the fact that we're bringing our phones into environments that we never would have before, you know, the photographs taken at meal times, some very strange behaviours that I explored in the book. For example, did you know that IKEA was a big place for Tinder pictures?
No, I
had no idea. So people go into an IKEA, go into one of those, like, you know, built up rooms and take pictures for IKEA as if that's their house.
No!
You know, bizarre behaviours in terms of how we're trying to project the reality of our life. And I think, obviously, the tricky side of that is that we feel that what we have isn't good enough. And, you know, when you come home and if you've spent time, I don't know, editing your pictures to make you look slimmer or, you know, smoothing your skin to make it look poreless, when you look in the mirror, it's never going to compete.
I have a real... Well, on the Food for Thought podcast in general, we try and speak out about this kind of thing all the time. But I have a real concern about the amount of airbrushing and things that are now in the public's hands. It was bad before it was obviously in magazines, but the fact that everybody can do it at any age now, and they're advertised these face-tuning apps and things to young kids who are going in, and that's setting them up to have body dysmorphia from a very young age.
Well, you can buy ones to improve the looks of your baby. So you put in your baby picture and like increase the size of their eyes to make them look cuter.
So I didn't know that. That's terrible.
It's right from, you know, when kids are only months old, they can be improved. I mean, you know, lots of people use those bunny ear Snapchat filters on their kids, don't they?
So, oh my goodness.
But, you know, it's definitely, you know, that every time you use Photoshop, you're telling yourself, you're reminding yourself that you're not good enough. And we all are good enough, you know, but no matter what shape and size, because ultimately beauty isn't really about what we look like. I know it sounds really old-fashioned, but it's like you are a package. And I think we've forgotten that we're a package. We're our personality and our vivacity and our intelligence and our, you know, emotional empathy and our career success and our relationships. And, you know, with the mixture of all of that and the excessive focus on just one small side.
Well, it's hard to express on image-based platforms.
Exactly, exactly.
Which is where I think the problem definitely comes in. And what about backlash and people? So we get bullying online and negative comments, negative feedback. How can people distance themselves from this? Because this is something that definitely I know is on the rise, online bullying.
Oh, for sure. But the government recently issued new advice, and it's just to block and completely give no airtime. Yeah. And I really believe that. I don't know if you've seen many of Brené Brown's.
I love Brené Brown.
You know, talks, and really reminding yourself that they are not in the arena. They're not even in the cheap seats. Mm-hmm. These aren't people that are, you know, communicating with you on any level except for to vent their own self-hatred. And it makes them feel better about themselves to try and make you feel worse. And if you turn around and say, I'm a dangerously confident woman and nothing you could possibly say can dent me, could dent me or my security, shut it down.
I think that's
the number one. Don't give them any airtime at all, because that's what they're looking for.
Well, I think the worrying thing is trolling, as we now call it. I mean, I've experienced it even on the nutrition platforms. I found it a bit of a shock at first. I thought, well, I'm just a health professional here, but obviously I'm putting myself out there, and I had to get very used to that. But the fact it now affects people that just have their own family and friends following them. Anybody can be anyone online. And there is an element now as well with programs on Netflix coming out. I don't know if you saw You.
Yeah.
Terrifying. Yeah, that absolutely terrified me. Anyone that hasn't watched this, maybe think twice before you do. Although it's a good eye-opener. It really taught me never get a shot of where I live in my Instagram story, the street I live on, where I'm going at the exact time.
Yeah, I mean, look, I've never never geotagged anything because I'm like being obsessed with fraud for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
But people could work it out.
Yeah.
And I'm really, really careful. But I think if you really tried hard, you know, you can find anyone's name on the electoral roll. And I know that as a journalist.
Oh, my goodness.
Like, I was married to a news reporter. You can find a lot of information about people in the public domain. And it's there. And all you're doing is feeding that information. Like, I don't ever publicly on social media celebrate my birthday or my family's birthdays because I don't want anyone to know our dates of birth. You know, it's ooh. I mean, if that information's out there, that information's out there forever. You know?
It is interesting when you look at what people, I don't know if you've ever done this, but when I was setting up the company Retrition and going through all the legality stuff, they said, have you ever Googled yourself and see what people search? And like the top thing was Rhiannon Lambert age.
Oh, age is always there. I've got age, ex-husband,
yes,
weight.
Husband.
Those are my three things.
Weight, yes.
You're like, awesome.
Yeah.
This is such a positive reflection of where we are in 2019.
it really kind of made me think, oh my goodness, thank goodness I don't actually talk about that stuff quite, you know, personal things. But now social media realistically hasn't really been around for that long, has it? Do you think that we're at the tip of the iceberg, or do you think we haven't really seen the effects it can have on people?
I mean, I don't think we've seen the effects that it can have on people, but I do think that there's already such a big movement towards this kind of, you know, humane tech. I think that as, you know, basically all of this bad news is bad for business. You know, anything, if we continue consuming this product and it has negative impacts on our health, that is bad for business. So ultimately, things have to shift. Although, I would say with the caveat, I don't believe that you can really trust the people that are profiting off the back of your potential misery, if we're honest, are really the ones to go to for solutions. But, you know, I do believe that there will be a movement within that tech industry, especially as younger people who have grown up with social media, are complete digital natives, become part of workforce. The workforce, their opinions and attitudes are obviously going to shift the way that technology is developed, and that will undoubtedly change things. I also think that we're starting to have education in schools. I'm now a parent of a child, and I understand 100% what this whole system is. I've worked in it. I know all of the back doors and the quirks, and obviously written a book about it.
Yeah.
So. Whereas,
would you keep your child free from online use for as long as possible?
I think for as long as possible, but as long as possible is different for every child,
yeah.
You know. Children are always going to rebel. They're always going to find a way around your rules and your advice. And I think the only thing you could possibly do as a parent is to keep the channels of communication open and just be super honest about what's out there, the threats out there, and just say if something has disturbed you or is very strange or whatever, just tell me about it and I can help you deal with it. I think you can't protect them from the world, either online or offline. That's the most difficult thing about being a parent, you know, it's you have to let go to a certain extent.
And like you said, it could be the making of them, so equally the opportunities that now present themselves.
Exactly. I think, you know, if you've got a daughter, you really want to say don't send any naked pictures of yourself,
gosh.
You know, especially with your head in it.
Oh, I know.
You know, and it's...
And who'd have thought you'd even have to have that
conversation? No, I know. And I do think that those, you know, there are some real red lines where things can potentially continue to ruin your life for a long time. And, you know, if you use homophobic or racist language online, even if you're under 18, that is written in pen and will be forever. And you know, when an employer searches out your information and maybe they find that, and okay, maybe you were 15 when you wrote it, you probably still aren't going to get a job when you're 23.
Yeah.
So you know, there is definitely that education piece that needs to be there. And I do feel like the families who have children now who are maybe like 20 or whatever, when they were 15, their parents probably were completely illiterate in the world of digital technology.
Yeah.
So, you know, these conversations weren't happening. So I do think we have probably turned a corner in that, you know, at least we have the vocabulary to keep these channels of communication.
That's
open.
Great to hear. And thank goodness we've got you on this podcast discussing this, because more people will listen that perhaps hadn't thought of these elements that they need to discuss with their children.
Yeah. And, you know, it's like everything. We teach kids how to cross the road. We teach them to run away from scary men, you know, or, you know, any man or woman
definitely.
Trying
cross
to,
the other
you know,
side of the road.
Exactly.
Yep,
all
I remember.
Of, you know, all of that stuff. And, you know, that the reality is in 2019, these are the things that, you know, children need advice on as well, because it's we've got this whole other realm of life where a lot of their life will be lived.
Yeah.
So it's just being really clear about the hard lines.
100%. From my avenue, it's shaping their relationship with food in a positive way, that food should be social and it's not perfectly preened images. Mm. And the amount of disordered eating behaviour I encounter in clinic is terrifying. But we have questions from people now that
Fabulous.
They would like to ask you that you will not have been privy to. Fern has asked, I feel like I have more friends on my phone now than in real life. Mm. But everyone's like that now, aren't they?
Do you know what? I don't think everyone is like it. I think that there are lots of people like it. I really do think that it is a big part of, you know, our contemporary times, that we often feel more connected to people with it, that we have very weak ties with, rather than like a deeper relationship.
Mm.
But, you know, ultimately, I would never say that friends online are worse than friends offline. You know, there are incredible communities of people who would have been completely alienated in their lives if it weren't for social media, you know, people with illnesses or mobility issues, and they've been able to develop, you know, incredible relationships online. And who are we to say that they're any lesser than, you know, relationships in real life?
And the last question Mary has said, and this is a little bit concerning, I'm worried about the amount of cosmetic procedures my daughter's getting influenced by others. So how do I get her to love herself for her?
I mean, again, this is a process that goes on through all our lives, you know. I interview quite a lot of plastic surgeons for the book, and it was really concerning. They told stories quite often of individuals, very young individuals, coming in with Facetune pictures or Snapchat filtered pictures and saying this is what they want their face to look like. And their big concern was, you know, in previous times, of course, people would come in and they would have one issue. It would be like they don't like their nose, they don't like their chin, and they would change it and feel empowered by that and move on with their life. Now people are coming in and asking to change their face.
Yeah.
We just all need to take a moment and say, you know, not everyone wins the genetic lottery.
And that's okay.
It's okay, because you know what? You've maybe won the lottery in a different area of your life, or that there's, you know, something
else.
And
happiness is not based purely on how you look. And believe me, I work with some of the most beautiful VIP clients you could imagine who are not happy either. So that moves me on to the fun part of the podcast, the fact or fiction round.
Uh-oh.
So if you could answer fact or fiction to the following, are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. 81% of teenagers felt social media has a positive effect of their lives.
You know, that could be fact.
Ooh, okay. Instagram is rated as the worst social media platform when it comes to its impact on young people's
That's
mental
fact.
Health. Okay,
That's fact.
Instagram's new policy now hides all pseudoscientific claims from brands.
In what? Oh, it hides them. That is the plan, isn't it? That it
well,
do it.
It's a dream.
Yeah, it's the dream. So it's fiction right now, like science fiction, but hoping to one day be fact.
One day. Come on, Graham. How they'll do that, I've no idea. 42% of consumers use social media to assist in their healthcare decision making.
Oh, that's probably fact.
Yeah, everyone should have at least one social media channel.
Difficult. I mean, I believe that is the case, because when HR professionals were analysed year before last, 50% of them said they wouldn't hire someone without a social media account.
Oh my goodness.
So you are kind of shooting yourself in the foot if you don't have any level of platform. And the big reasoning behind it was that people felt that it made you appear you had something to hide.
Oh, really? I quite value the lack of social... interesting.
I always think, like, if it was a guy, he's got no social footprint, you're like, cool. But I think from an employment point of view, I think they want to make sure they've done their background check and have been able to tick a box. That's and so if it's not there...
No. Well, 41% of Instagram users say it makes them feel anxious, sad or depressed.
I mean... if it's only 41%, I'm surprised, but yes, fact.
Social media is fueling higher rates of depression among girls than boys.
Yeah, that's fact.
66% of people have difficulty sleeping after using social media.
Fact, but I'll go more. Anyway.
Yep, don't worry. The Royal Society of Public Health has described social media as more addictive than cigarettes and alcohol.
Yeah, that's fact.
Oh my goodness. When not triggering feelings of envy, social media has positive effects on well-being.
I mean, it can. It's all about the way you use it. It's about the headspace that you go into it with. And I always say, if you're having a really crappy day and you're on your period and you feel really vulnerable, don't go onto social media.
Yeah, I think around, especially for women listening, around that time of month, that is solid advice. That was an excellent fact or fiction round, Catherine. Thank you. And that nearly wraps up this episode. But as with every guest, we ask to finish with a food for thought. So mine today would be that social media was created to be a positive outlet, a platform for people to express themselves. But it now has become, as we've discussed, an avenue potentially of quite a bit of negativity. And some young people that have never known the world without social media now give away information without thinking or knowing the consequences. As we said earlier, Catherine doesn't put her birthday on or special dates. Just don't give people an opportunity, perhaps. Keep a little bit back for yourself. You can get sucked into a world of online games and dangerous online trends, which is something I see in my clinic all the time, especially dangerous dietary advice. Although most of us know all of this, we largely decide that we don't want to give up on social media after all. We don't want to be gripped by FOMO, the fear of missing out. And we can scroll through perfectly curated Instagram posts, capturing people's happy moments, and ask ourselves, why aren't we as happily fulfilled with life? So I think we just need to realise that it isn't real. Like we touched on at the very beginning together, that we need to spread the message that there's no such thing as the perfect life, no matter how great it may look online. And together we have the power to spread awareness and positivity, and being open and sharing how we struggle can help change the relationship future generations have with their phones. So that's my waffle, Catherine. Yep. If you could share with everyone something you think would really benefit our listeners.
Yeah, I mean, I had a little think about this. I mean, we touched on it beforehand about how to curate, a social media experience that's positive for you. And I think that the best thing you possibly can do is don't do this online. Take a piece of paper and a pen, old school, and write down the things that inspire you about life. What are you interested in? What are your interests? Is it a specific sport or a specific artistic movement or a type of food or travel? Or, you know, write all of that down. And then maybe write some of the things that you aspire to. Might it be certain careers in certain areas? Are there certain speakers that really appeal to you? And finally, write what you think you would like the world to look like. And I think if that includes people of all colours, sizes, creeds, you know, and people that inspire you to maybe make change along the realms of sustainability or, you know, changes in the political structure of things. Writers, you know, people that have really managed to have something to say, let's say. If you write all of this down, then look at who you're actually following on social media. And everyone that doesn't reflect an element of that, unless they're like a colleague and it would be super awkward to unfollow them, just get rid of it and then go on a quest to find the people that really fulfill all of these areas for you, these accounts, and build up something. And you know, one of those things, it can be fashion or it can be shoes. I'm not saying it all has to be incredibly deep and, you know, worthy. It can be whatever you like. Maybe it's motorbikes, maybe it's salmon fishing, maybe it's pottery. You know, we all have our own idiosyncratic, you know, tastes and interests. Just make sure that what you're consuming is really serving you. And, you know, you will have an exponentially different relationship with social media after really doing that level of, you know, it's almost Marie Kondoing your feed, I think. Is it bringing you joy? You know, and probably there are a lot of accounts that aren't bringing you joy at the moment. So that would be my food for thought.
Wow, Catherine, what a wonderful and excellent task, actually, to set all of our listeners to finish this episode on. Thank you so much for sharing your wisdom with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to Food for Thought. It really is amazing to know there's such a craving to hear from expert voices in a world full of confusing advice. If you enjoyed this episode, you will absolutely love what's coming next week. So please make sure you click subscribe to be the first to hear it. And please, if you have time, do leave a 5-star review. It really does help to get our podcast out there to reach higher highs in the charts and hopefully help more and more people. For more information about my Retrition Clinic, books, healthy recipes, events, retreats, and so much more, please visit Retrition.com and follow me at Retrition on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.